do?
Follow the money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah. This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Here we go. Welcome in. It is Follow the Money on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. This show is brought to you by DraftKings. Mitch Moss along with Jonathan Von Tobel this week. As Paul Howard is on vacation, we're live in downtown Las Vegas from the Circa Resort and Casino. A little bit of everything today on the show. What a time of year. Get into the golf, Masters recap, looking ahead to betting the PGA Championship next month, NBA, the crazy final day of the regular season, moving forward to the playing games and first round playoff series prices as well, NFL draft, Major League Baseball card. Can we start right there? How sneaky good is April on the sports calendar year?
Oh, it's especially when you add now the last, this is the eighth year of the NFL draft betting. So you get like that final event at the end of the month where we're all getting ready for it. We've been talking about it ad nauseum forever. Oh, it's absolutely tremendous.
It's
got to be one of the best on the year now.
Right. We all think like maybe September, October, very top of the list. Football starting, baseball's winding down. You get the beginning of the NBA and the NHL seasons. Weather's great, generally speaking, in a lot of spots still. March comes to mind because of the madness. There are so many things going on. We don't have a down period at all until after the NBA finals at this point, after the NBA draft?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you could argue that once the series thin out, right, and you're only talking about four teams in action once you get to the conference finals, maybe. But outside of that, no, this is arguably this time that, of course, I think peak sports viewing, just in terms of volume of events, obviously in winter, when college football, NFL, hockey, start of the NBA season, all that stuff goes on. But in terms of the magnitude of the events we're getting here too, Masters, draft, everything in between. Now, April's awesome.
I thought after the madness or around, probably after the first round of the men's tournament, I'm like, okay, now my accounts are going to take a break for a minute. I'm not going to have a zillion bets. I'll wait a little. Not the case. It's only ramped up.
Yep. Everything.
Because again, with the baseball every single day, the NBA stuff finally coming to a conclusion yesterday for the regular season and the NFL draft around the corner. Hey, dummy, you're going to have 100 bets on the draft now as well. So forget about it for, another month or so. But the Masters turned into, I thought Saturday's action was absolutely brilliant for about a two-hour window when we had five guys, short amount of time, tied for first. And it was a little hairy whether or not Scotty was going to be able to pull away. And then he eventually did yesterday. But this guy has been fantastic the entire year. We talked about this back in March. Maybe this was going to be boring, JVT, and we're going to get a lot of chalk this time of year. And I tied it into South Carolina women winning the women's, yep, UConn winning the men's, and now Scotty taking down the Masters, and all three of those things came in.
Right, and when you looked at it on the surface too, I mean, you kind of think plus 450 to win a golf tournament, you probably don't want to get in there, right?
Yeah, I know.
It's too short. Maybe, for example, minus 200 to finish inside of the top 10, that's somewhat more palatable considering how good he could be, but that it's nuts. And the fact that you watched the play, and I thought Sunday was wildly impressive. When you get to that stretch on Sunday where it's a four-way tie approaching the turn, and he bogeys, and you're like, okay, cool, maybe this is going to get interesting. It's nah, birdie, some of the most impressive shots I've seen from a golfer ever. And then he just sails the rest of the way. The only blemish, of course, on 11. That was brilliant. Great watching greatness transpire to that level.
I agree.
Is so cool to watch in the moment. And that I was transfixed. I thought it was incredible.
You're right, because he wasn't even playing well to begin yesterday.
Yep.
And I thought to myself, it doesn't look like it's going to go well for Scotty today. He did not have it right away. I think he maybe had some nerves out there, as he did 2 years ago. He woke up on the final day of the Masters 2 years ago and told his wife, he started crying, and he told his wife, I don't know if I'm ready for this. And it kind of was playing out like that to begin yesterday. But then after he corrected it and all of those players were making a run at him, Aubert for a little while, Homa was right there. How about that shot on 12 for poor Max Homa?
Yep.
Who went 32 holes without making a birdie. He was right there hanging tough the entire time. And then he's 7 under right there with Scotty. And then somehow on 12, it just ricochets off the back of the green and into the unimaginable difficulty with the rough back there. And so he could never recover from that, obviously. And then Morikawa talked about how he got too gritty after the round was done with. He learned that lesson. And so Scotty now is basically in Tiger Woods territory with these numbers. And you look at this good tweet from Todd Dewey, who covers gambling for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. So he was 4-1. Well, a little bit higher than that to win the Masters. He's 4-1 now at the Westgate to win the PGA. The shortest favorite to win that event since Tiger was 4-1 in 2013. Scheffler is plus 450 to win the U.S. Open, 5-1 to win the British. If he wins all four and takes on the Grand Slam, which will not happen, it would be about 164-1.
That's it.
Yeah.
And like, you look at it too, like the numbers for him yesterday, for the entire tournament, strokes gained tee to green, he almost doubled up the second golfer.
Yeah.
He was incredible watching that happen. And you watch, you're like, okay, cool. He's doing really well. And then you look at the statistics and how well he had been playing there. It's incredible to have the precision he did with those irons, it's too early in the morning. Which hole has the water right in front of the green?
Is it 12?
I think it's 12, right 16? where he's sitting there and he's got like this kind of tough shot. He's right on the rough. And I think the Athletic had a great quote where he asked his caddy, he's like, what do you think we should do here? He's like, do what you always done. Carries the water. He's like, all right, let's go. Boom. Just go straight over right in the middle of the green. Like, the guy was incredible.
Imagine if he gets it down to where his 8, 10, 12 footers are going in that range. Then forget about it. He's going to be unbeatable. Now, having said that, I'm not going to be betting him at the PGA. That number to me is too short. Also, he is going to be, I mean, the big deal that was made this weekend is, could Scottie Scheffler leave the Masters, even if he's leading, if his wife goes into labor? And he talked about this with Jim Nance afterwards and how he doesn't even know what it's going to be like. The feeling of being a dad for the first time is going to be incredible. Like, that when the PGA comes around, his newborn child is going to be, what, a week old, 2 weeks old?
Yeah.
Maybe 3 weeks old? You're a father twice over. What were you like in the first 2 weeks after having your first kid?
Well, I was a mess. I was watching 1913 at like 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, on HBO. I will say, I don't have the financial backing of Scottie Scheffler to potentially get some help there. I don't think he's going to be chilling in a two-bedroom apartment with, you know, a two-year-old watching HBO. I'm sure he'll be involved, but I don't think he'll be dealing with the same things I will.
Right, but you could tell that he's a total family man.
Oh, of course, yes.
You know, he's a religious guy, so it does mean the world to him. That's one reason why, along with a number here, and I did parlay, and I talked about this in March.
Yeah.
So I parlayed Scheffler along with UConn, and it got there. I'm not going to be doing any parlays with Scottie Scheffler to win the PGA Championship. I'm going to have to look elsewhere.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, again, you go back to those numbers. It is hard realistically in a golf tournament to do that. Although statistically, he's at the peak of his powers. When you look at every single metric and the way that he's been playing, it is equivalent to what we've seen from Tiger Woods. But, you know, and I thought this was the right strategy for this tournament, Mitch. Even if you want to bet on Scheffler, the way to do it in these tournaments, too, would be after round one. I mean, there is a good shot he gets to win, obviously, every single one of these. But there's also a pretty good shot that after a round one, the price does, you know, the price itself balloons, the odds decrease, and that you can get something a little bit better than 4-1.
Sure. That's if he comes out, has a bad round one.
Right. Or even just like 2-under and somebody else is, you know, up ahead.
If Scottie Scheffler is 6 strokes back going into Friday,
I don't think I'd ever doubt it.
You scared?
No, not at all.
He can't make a run?
Not at all.
Of course he can. And you're going to get a much better number, to your point, then. What was it like for you watching Tiger yesterday? You're much younger than I am.
Yeah.
So I grew up in Tiger's prime. I will say that was a little difficult to watch yesterday and Saturday.
It's funny when you brought when I knew we were going to talk about this, I was thinking about this a little bit more. And to your point, that was the first thing I thought of. Like, Tiger for me, it was never, you know, and in my younger days, I didn't really watch a ton of golf, right? It was more in my later years. So I never experienced like the peak of what Tiger was. So I don't want to say he's always been this, but he's never been that dominant figure. I've never seen that really.
Yeah.
Never taken it in live. It's just going back and watching things and whatnot. But it's still, I think it's just still tough in general. When you know about the history, you know how good he is. I mean, again, we're talking about these odds to win these tournaments to where he was, and then seeing him struggle with some of these simple putts, can't get anything down. I think it was Saturday. He talked to, they asked him after his round on Saturday, and the answer to like, hey, did Friday essentially take a lot out of you? And he just goes, yeah. Like, he just doesn't seem to be healthy. And that's the part that sucks. It's not even struggling. It's that he's continuously trying to push through this. And obviously, he's taken a hit in terms of the returns on his game.
Yeah, playing 23 holes on Friday.
Yes.
No doubt came back to bite him because he was actually in pretty good shape on the leaderboard, right? Not looking too bad going into Saturday. And then when he's out there and the video that probably, you know, made the rounds, and if you missed it, he's lifting his shirt up and you can see he's got a big patch on his lower back.
Yep.
And he's, even with that big patch on to help the pain, he's rubbing whatever it was, the icy hot or whatever he has, Biofreeze. Beyond that, he's probably got something that's 10 times better than what we can get at the, you know, CVS down the street. But it just, it wasn't, and he just fell apart on Saturday and Sunday. And so I had two TVs on at the same exact time, and it was, I think it was either yesterday or Saturday. I'm getting my days now mixed up. But the one TV, they were revisiting 2019 when he won, which I still argue would be one of the best sporting events of all time. The 2019 Masters was as good as it gets. So they were showing that at the same time as he was actually playing real live golf this year. You want to talk about a juxtaposition that blew my mind, because all those golfers waited for him at Butler Cabin, and it was like one of the highlights of their lives to have a narrow loss to Tiger, but they were so excited for him to win in 2019 and how well he played compared to this year, where it's just feeling awful for the guy. And we're never going to get back to that spot where he was only 5 years ago.
Yeah, and that Masters, like, that's the closest thing that I can get to, like, you know, watching like what that was like for him. And I'll never forget, it was one of the holes down the stretch where he almost holds it from the fairway, and you could, in the camera cuts to him that year he wins the Masters in 2019, and you can kind of see he's cursing, and you're like, oh, he's mad that he didn't hold it.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, that's how
he expected
great,
to.
Yes, that's how great this guy is. It's incredible.
Up next, NBA first round series prices. And what happened on the final day of the NBA's regular season? It was wild and somewhat inexplicable. I know people who are not happy. I don't blame them. But guess what? That's sports betting and gambling. This is Follow the Money on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah, yeah. This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Welcome in. It is Follow the Money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. This show is brought to you by DraftKings. Mitch Moss along with Jonathan Von Tobel. This week, Pauly is on vacation. We're live in downtown Las Vegas from the Circa Resort and Casino. And the NBA's regular season is finally over with, which means we get the play-in games tomorrow and Wednesday night. We also have the first-round playoff series numbers available. And at DraftKings, the menu at DraftKings for everything is gigantic. Yep. And they did not mess around at all with the NBA playoffs as well. Like, to bet these series, you can find pretty much anything that you're looking for.
And they put them up almost immediately.
Yeah, they're up, bang, just like that. So let's begin in the Western Conference. My prediction, not so much for the series at this point, but my prediction is going to be, and I think yours as well, right, is going to be, you're not going to find too many people make the case for the Clippers to beat the Mavericks in this series.
No.
And I say that because Dallas has been red hot. And I think when ESPN sends out, like, I'll use them as the example here. I think when they send out their predictions overall, they probably have between like 15 and 20 people at the network give their predictions. My guess is going to be it's going to be something in the 15-2 range.
Sure.
Of people picking the Mavericks compared to people picking the Clippers.
Yeah, I think so. I think that, and we also, and to be fair, too, because we've seen this series price, some spots open the Clippers as a small underdog. DraftKings opened them up as a small, like, $1.20 favorite. It's not like about a pick.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what's happening with Kawhi Leonard. That's like the big thing that hangs over this series. Now, the Clippers have said, the reports are MRI was clean. He's fine. I will also remind everybody that last year he flat out lied about his knee, right? He allegedly injured in game one and that win over the Phoenix Suns, played game two without popping up on the injury report, and then game three was out, and then they said he hurt it in game one.
Uh-huh.
So I wouldn't trust them as far as you could throw them. But I will say this, if he is healthy, let's assume the truth, and let's just say that he's going to be out there healthy and ready to go for game one of this series. The Clippers can win this series,
obviously. Of course they can.
They should be favored to win this series. And there's kind of this weird, like, this thought that the Mavericks and Luka Doncic own the Los Angeles Clippers. They got a winning record against them the last three seasons. They're 2-0 against them in the postseason, the Dallas Mavericks. And the Mavericks have gotten much better. And for me, that's the fascinating part. You mentioned how good they are. So their new starting lineup, Luka Doncic, Kyrie Irving, Derek Jones Jr., PJ Washington, Daniel Gafford, at about 400 possessions total played together, Mitch, a plus 15.9 net rating. And the most impressive part, a defensive rating that gives up just barely over a point per possession. Like, that's how good they've been. And that, for me, is where it starts, because the reason why I like playoff basketball so much, it's all about those matchups. So, like, if you're the Clippers, in past years, Ivica Zubac has been eaten alive by Luka Doncic. He picks on him every possession down the floor. Can you play small ball? Because if you put, like, PJ Tucker in there, well, then all of a sudden Daniel Gafford's going to be catching lobs all over the place, right, absolutely destroying you. And so the intricacies of those matchups, what they're going to do, I'm absolutely fascinated by what the series is going to be.
So people that make the case for the Mavericks, I think they're also going to say it's going to be maybe a 5 or 6 game series. I'm not going to buy into that. Yep. However, you can bet the Mavericks -1.5 games at DraftKings plus 155. And you're right. If you go back to like March 11th, that was the game against the Bulls where it really flipped for this Mavericks team. They blew out the Bulls in that spot. And that's when the defense really just looked like it did a total turnaround. They're basically the best team in the NBA.
Yes.
Right. Since that point. But if Kawhi, that's the biggest if of the entire playoffs, probably. If Kawhi plays, total game changer. Mm-hmm. If not, they're not going to win the series, in my opinion. And I ran this by you last night. I don't like laying big prices. However, the Mavericks +2.5 games is -475. I totally agree with everything that you just said. I can see the Clippers winning the series. In fact, if Kawhi plays, I think they're going to. But I don't think the Clippers are going to beat them in a sweep or a 5-game series.
No.
I think if the Clippers win this series, it's going to be 6 or 7. You can get 2. I know it's minus. Nobody ever wants to talk about laying big numbers, me included, but -475 on +2.5 games, I don't hate it.
No, I don't at all, especially when you look at the way that the Clippers, I'm going to pull up the exact number, but the way that they've been playing defensively, we'll call it like since the post All-Star break, hasn't really been great for them. Post All-Star break, they are 24th in non-garbage time defensive efficiency. Now, their offense has still been very good, but their defense just hasn't been there. And so when you're going to have these certain mismatches that Luka Doncic is going to be able to pick on, well, you yourself are going to be able to do that too. Like each one of these series that they had played with them was extremely tight. Remember the last time they played, they were down 3-2 going back to Dallas. Kawhi Leonard scored like 45 points. Yeah. It was incredible. Pushed it to 7. They eventually won that series too. Like, no, these are going to be hard, tight, like fought. This is a series in which even if Kawhi Leonard plays, I'm sure the Clippers will probably only be like $1.30, $1.45 favorite. I would argue it should be higher, but either way, it's going to be a tight series if Kawhi's going to be out there and down to the wire. I would agree with that sentiment at all.
It sounds to me, though, like you don't have a bet on this yet.
No,
because you need to know.
I need to know. Now, and I think, too, instead of, because you said, what was it, Mavericks +2.5 games?
+2.5 games,
What's the series total? Because you could also do that, right?
I think it's, you can. Oh, they got everything. Yeah, it's so absolutely like, incredible.
So you can go over, a certain amount of games, like something like that in that nature. I think you would totally look at something there in terms of total games played for the series. It's totally probable.
5.5 overs -195.
There you go. Something like that.
You could also find over 6.5 at a pretty nice plus price.
Right. So essentially asking, is this game, yes, no, will it go 7? And I think that's it's a very plausible reality.
Okay. So this is incredible. Great tweet from @ Power Trip Bets. Power Trip is a morning show in Minneapolis on KFAN. The Minnesota Timberwolves have been underdogs in an NBA longest 22 consecutive playoff games. The streak goes back to May 19, 2004, and the Sacramento Kings Western Conference semifinal series. They opened up a 2-point favorite against the Suns in game one. Will they go off the favorite here in this game? They're not even the favorite to win the series, and here they are. They've been one of the best teams in the NBA the entire year.
I mean, that's the fascinating dynamic, right? You're like, yes, 2 is a coin flip. It's barely being favored, but you're favored to win your first game, and yet you're a small underdog for the series against Phoenix. And I'll say this. Look, I think from a matchup standpoint, Minnesota did not want to see Phoenix. Like, when you have guys who are elite shot makers, no matter who is defending them, that's a problem. And as good as Mike Conley is defensively, he's very sound. He's not shutting down Devin Booker or anything. And maybe that's Edwards' assignment. When you've seen him play in the past, that's kind of the guy who's picked up. But, the way I've been putting it, Mitch, is the market has been waiting for the opportunity to bet on Phoenix, to ratchet up that power rating. I was hoping they were going to get Oklahoma City, so I could lay the crap out of a very short price for the Oklahoma City Thunder against Phoenix. Because I think the market is too high here on the Suns. And I find myself gravitating toward Minnesota. Like, I get the matchup is poor. I get they played them poorly the last few times that they have played them as well. But you give a guy like Chris Finch, their head coach, time to get ready with a defensive scheme. And you get a Suns team that, yes, down the stretch has played better, but over the grand scheme of things, has also fallen flat on their face multiple times.
Oh, yes.
Losing to the Clippers the way they did in that game against Phoenix. Remember, 2 weeks ago, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander gets ruled out. Jalen Williams isn't playing. They go to Oklahoma City, get boat raced by the Oklahoma City Thunder. There's so many different spots in which this team has fallen short, but the market's been waiting for them to be so good. I want to say that Phoenix is overvalued coming into the series.
Okay, so you're holding Timberwolves at a nice big number to win the Western Conference this year. You grab that right away this season. What is your advice here for others who are in the same boat? It sounds to me like you almost want to add more Minnesota in the series.
Part of me wants to. I mean, the perfect thing is that you can't do anything, right?
You can't do anything, no.
At the very, especially if you have something to win the Western Conference, at the minimum, you need them to make it to a Western Conference semifinals. You need it to be in the second round so you can take a piece off of this, but you don't want to start taking things, you know, stay taking out of your stake, you know, three rounds in, because by the time you get to the Western Conference finals, you're going to have nothing left. Right, you can't do it. So, like, that's part of my push and pull with this as well is, I feel like there is some value here in Minnesota, but as somebody who already has something on them, do I just want to sit back and wait and see what's going to happen with the series because I've already got an investment that says I think they are better than what the market believes?
Okay. If you did not have the Wolves, though, 30-1, you'd be betting them here.
Yeah, I think so. And I'd be fascinated to see. We got a couple of days, right, obviously, until this series begins and what the market does with this, right? I mean, we're talking about Phoenix minus 115. Does it get up to the point where you might get, you know, even money, plus 105, plus 110 on Minnesota by the time we get to the tip-off? Yeah.
Might. How about the Eastern Conference? The Bucks and the Pacers play in the first round. It's the 3 versus the 6. It did not go well for the Bucks against Indy in the regular season. And yet the Bucks are at DraftKings a 245 favorite. The Pacers plus 195 on the take back.
By the way, so this is, I tweeted this out yesterday. How about this little nugget? Average closing total in the regular season series between the Bucks and the Pacers. So they played 5 games.
Let me guess. 248.5.
254.9.
That was the average.
The average closing total. This one opened up for game one, 238.5.
Oh, yeah.
So we've come a long way. But what I'm interested in is, while the Bucks are 1-4 against Indiana, they haven't played since January 3rd.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
So they have not faced Pascal Siakam with the Indiana Pacers, and the Pacers have not played them since Doc Rivers has taken over. And while it hasn't gone particularly well, Doc has a losing record, the one thing you could say, Mitch, is they've gotten better defensively. With Adrian Griffin, they had a defensive rating of 117.8. They gave up 119.2 points every 100 plays off of live rebounds defensively. With Doc Rivers, 114.2. So about 3.6 points fewer per 100 possessions defensively overall. And off of live rebounds, their transition defense has gotten way better. In fact, 5.1 points fewer per 100 plays off of live rebounds. So you're playing an Indiana Pacers team that is not playing as fast anymore because Pascal Siakam likes to play through the post, and they're effective, but they've gotten better defensively. Giannis, again, is the big thing, right? Is he going to play? If you take Damian Lillard at his word, after he got hurt, Lillard told them that he suffered the same injury. It took 2 weeks for him to recover. That would put you right at the start of this series. And if Giannis isn't going to be available, I understand the price moving in favor of Indiana. But if you're telling me Giannis is going to be there at the start of game one, I don't know. I feel like we might get to a point where if the price gets low enough, you could talk me into getting back here on Indiana, or excuse me, on Milwaukee.
You know, so I was watching the NBA show last night, the playoff special on ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally agree with what Stephen A. Smith said. He says that just by watching it, doesn't look like Damian Lillard even wants to be there.
Sure. And we should know, too, by the way, since Tyrese Halliburton's injury, remember, he got hurt really bad.
Yeah.
He went from 23 points a game, essentially 24, to just 17.
Yeah.
49% shooting from the floor, 45% since the injury. He's not been the same.
NFL draft up next. It's coming up next Thursday. Could this be a tell for who this team is drafting in the top 10?
This is Follow the Money on
VSEN. Folks, it's still open for free, so check it out now. If you use betting splits as part of your handicapping tools, well, you can check them out for free over at VSEN.com/splits. Page is still open. You don't even need a pro subscription. So you can check out where the money and bets are moving today in Major League Baseball and future events as well, so you can get an early look at the play-in games in the NBA. Check it out now, VSEN.com/splits.
April is awesome. Next Thursday already, we get the NFL draft.
I can't believe it came quickly and slowly at the same time.
You're right. Yep. Okay, so the quarterback market here in the first round, right, here you go. This gets you fired up more than anything, I believe.
Yes, it does.
So here in Las Vegas at Estacia Casinos, the prop opened up a long time ago. I want to say that was either late February or early March.
Yeah, Chuck opened up pretty early. He did, yeah.
He did a great job with all these markets, right? And that, I think, peaked late last week over 4.5 quarterbacks to go in the first round. What was the biggest number you saw?
On the overs, like minus 320, I want to say.
I think I saw minus 350.
Okay, yeah, somewhere in that range.
So the under was plus 260 at
the high
point.
That's for sure the high point, yep.
Yeah, that's coming down here. Also at DraftKings now, over 4.5 quarterbacks is minus $2. The under is plus 160 this morning. So you've been saying this since the, I think the college football season was still going on.
Why?
When you were basically saying, I can't wait to bet the under on the quarterback prop.
Well, so this is my thing for years now. I've bet under on quarterbacks in the first round every single year since the draft has started.
Oh, good for you. I have not. Good for you.
And my whole thing, and for those who don't know, so we've had 7 years now. This will be the eighth year. In the last 7 years, 6 years, we've gone under the total for quarterbacks in the first round. And as I always point out, there's a caveat. The 1 year it went over, that was Lamar Jackson's year, the number actually closed 5. So if you got the right number, you're actually sitting at 6-0-1 to the under if you've played this the right way since NFL draft betting has been a thing. And my thing has just always been, like, you know, we give quarterbacks too much credit, right, when it comes to the conversations around them. We also overvalue where these guys might end up going. And you get, like, perfect examples. You know, Mitch, the I always think the perfect example is the Malik Willis, Kenny Pickett year, right, where everybody and their mother was telling you, you know, I watch these guys, I don't think they're first-round picks. And yet the market's like, that 3.5 shaded to the over. One guy goes in the first round.
I think, was that also Desmond Ridder?
Yes. Yeah. Desmond Ridder, I think it was the Matt Corral draft as well, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think you're right, yep. Yeah.
I mean, you go back to last year, and it's even around the mock drafts and the information that are out there. There's headlines, Will Levis, Indianapolis Colts, right? That was supposed to be the connection. Will Levis was supposed to go number 4 to Indianapolis.
A year ago, next week, it took off on Reddit.
Yep, the Reddit thing.
He might go number 1 overall.
He's telling
my cousin
fans.
Told my milkman that time to fill up.
Will Levis is telling people he's going number 1 overall. And then, by the way, obviously the market fell for it. But like, this has always just kind of been my thing, is we do this all the time. And sure enough, it happened again this year. So I've actually been very, like, somewhat alone on this, where I actually kind of feel like we're doing this again with JJ McCarthy, where I don't think he's actually going to go as high as we expect. You know, a lot of people keep going, oh, 1, 2, 3, 4, it could be quarterbacks. We're starting to see some pushback on that. Dane Brugler, for those who don't know, works at The Athletic, one of the more respected NFL draft guys out there, came out with his beast. He's got JJ McCarthy as actually a 21st, so like, you know, 21st overall. He's got him on a second round grade. Yep. So I think he's going to go a little bit later than we expect. But guys like Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr., solidly second to third round guys, according to Brugler. You see guys like Todd McShay, I know you guys played the audio right last week, where he's telling Ryan Russillo, everybody that I have spoken to has at best a second round grade on Bo Nix.
And they're calling him a backup.
Yep, they all think he's going to be a backup. Penix, polarizing, but again, consistently, by the way, I think it's crazy, but consistently behind Bo Nix in a lot of the different things.
Which I don't get.
Right. But either way, I have become more and more, because of the returns over the last 6 years, but also just because as more information comes out and as we get closer to the draft, it's becoming more and more likely that, again, Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr. are going to be second to third round selections. And I think it just makes more sense.
Let me ask you this. If a book posted 5.5 quarterbacks and the under, like, how high would you bet that to the under?
I mean, that's the value would be insane on 5.5.
Would you go like under? You would easily bet like minus $3.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Would you bet like minus $5 on that?
I mean, yeah. If you had the bankroll, do it. Yes. I mean, because I was texting with Doug Kazarian about this, and he brought this up to me too, where on 5.5, like given the way the market opened, theoretically, you should be opening that on like -1,000 on an under or something like that. Like if you really look at how that should be priced. So, oh yeah. Like if for whatever reason you got 5.5 under minus like 350, I think the actual like value in that percentage would be astronomical.
Here's what I'm going to do, because there are so many books. I don't have access to all of them. But if anybody sees that number out there, can you please tweet the show with a screen grab of that at VSIN Live, at Mitch Moss Radio. He's at me, JVT. I'm looking specifically for how many quarterbacks will go in the first round if a book has 5.5. I'm curious at what the juice is as we sit here now a week and a half before the event takes place. Now, this is a good tweet from Steve Palazzolo, Pro Football Focus. He pointed out, did the math on this, looked at all the numbers. New Falcons head coach, Raheem Morris, his Rams defense had 355 snaps where at least one edge defender dropped into coverage last year, most in the league. He broke down the most coverage snaps among top edges this year in the draft. Look at this. Yep. Dallas Turner sticks out like a sore thumb. It's 238 JVT, and nobody else is even... He's lapping the field by five times the amount.
Yes, so he seems like a... you know, at this timely reference, he seems like a hand in glove fit, right? You know, with Raheem Morris. So when you look at what Raheem Morris wants to do with some of his edge rushers, I think it makes a lot of sense. And by the way, like, I've seen two mock drafts that have Jared Verse at that position in terms of for Atlanta instead of a guy like Dallas Turner.
Lance Zierlein, one of them, and he said, I'm going to plant my flag on Verse going eighth overall to the Falcons.
Sure. And look, it makes sense, but this to me pushed it over the edge. So I added a little bit. But by the way, the numbers moved. I know I was texting about you this last week. Dallas Turner to go eighth overall at one point was plus 340. It's now plus 250 to go eighth overall,
which is the best number.
So it came down almost, you know, full buck. But like, I think that's still worth it. When you're talking about, again, just like a plus price, and going back to what we're talking about with the quarterbacks, you know, like, betting under at plus 260, totally worth it when you have the history that we do with quarterbacks. Same thing here where you have this at least fit. You have a team that's clearly looking for an edge rusher that a lot of people think are going to go that direction. You have a coach that likes to use his edge rushers in certain situations, and you have an edge rusher coming out that has experience dropping into coverage and doing those things. And I thought at plus 340, I actually still think a plus 250, that's still worth putting something on here with Turner going eighth. And by the way, specifically, it's Turner to go eighth overall. So if the Falcons trade back and draft them, obviously get screwed because you're not going to be there.
Right.
I don't think there's any reason for the Falcons, who are going to get their first pick of the best defensive player, to move out of that spot.
I don't know if they're going to trade out.
Right. You know?
I don't think that's going to be a team that does. Maybe they do. Maybe I'm wrong on that because so many trades can happen. I think they're going to stay put at number eight.
You're going to get your pick of every defensive player.
And if you're exactly right. And if they do, like, the edge position to be selected by the Falcons, I saw minus 250.
Yep.
So if it's going to be an edge player, if it's that big of a favorite, well, it's probably going to be Turner or Verse.
Yeah. Well, it's so cool. Like, it's crazy how stuff like this shapes markets. So, for example, if you actually look at the first defensive player drafted market, the three edge guys are actually all the top three picks. So it's like, so it's Dallas Turner, it's Jared Verse, and it's Laiatu Latu, who are those top three selections, because we just know that, hey, Atlanta seems really likely that they're going to have the first defensive player off the board and they want an edge rusher. So it's more than likely going to be one of these three guys.
I'll give you another one too. You can find the first position drafted by the Chargers. Offensive lineman is minus 125. That number, actually, I like it so much, it scares me.
Yeah.
I mean, is Jim Harbaugh the biggest BSer in the NFL by his comments 2 weeks ago, where he basically said he was talking glowingly about the offensive line and how important it is to build success, and they're going to run the football. Greg Roman's the new offensive coordinator. Based on his history with other teams, they love to run the ball. Everybody just thinks because there's no more Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, they're automatically going to go wide receiver fifth or wherever they might pick in the first round if they trade back. That's, to me, it's not going to be the case. To me, it's going to be offensive linemen.
Yeah, and I also think, I would say the reality in which they don't is if Marvin Harrison Jr. is there at five, right? If they actually go quarterbacks for the first four picks, which I don't think is going to happen, and then you're sitting there if you're the Chargers and the best wide receiver prospect in a while, so just sitting there, that's probably where you get burned. But I would agree with you, and I would actually say, too, if you trade back, I would say that increases the likelihood of them potentially going after one of these offensive linemen. It's a deep class.
Sure.
By the way, that's also one of the ones I bet. Over 9.5 offensive linemen first round at about minus 140.
Okay.
I haven't seen anything less than 10.
In like every mock, you're seeing 10 or more.
Yeah.
Okay. How about the cornerbacks prop? Did you do anything with that number?
No, I haven't.
Those are the three big ones that are available. The offensive line, the cornerbacks. Well, the wide receivers are in there as well, along with the QBs.
Yeah, the common number that I've seen in these mocks that I've put together is five for the corners. On the low end, it's four, but like five is the most common number that you see in the first round. And I think you're looking at 5.5 is the number for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I guess you'd lean under because it doesn't seem like it seems to be strong, but it seems to be top heavy. Also tempted by a big price on under safeties, under a half. The only kid that might come in is, I think it's the safety out of Minnesota. I think it's might sneak in there.
I've seen actually some mocks of the Packers taking him there.
Really?
But who knows? Because the Packers pick has been all over the map.
Yeah.
Either offensive lineman, cornerback generally is the number one pick, but also people are making the case for linebacker as well for Green Bay. So you still like the Titans offensive lineman, even though it's minus $3 now?
Yeah. I think it'd be worth it. Some spots are as high as minus 500.
That big? Okay.
Given what you've seen them add, given where the market's going, if you can find like $3 or better. Again, in the NFL draft, you mentioned it, you don't like to lay points. In the NFL draft, it's based off information. You're going to be laying prices a lot. I thought that was worth it.
All right. So up next, we're going to do door number one or door number two. JBT is going to be great on this. He has to pick one. Which quarterback is going as a first rounder? We'll ask him coming up next.
Follow the money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah. This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Welcome in. It is Follow the Money here on VSiN, the sports betting network. This show is brought to you by DraftKings. Mitch Moss along with Jonathan Von Tobel. He's in for Pauly. Pauly is on vacation this week, starting this hour off talking about NBA, the play-in games, and the first-round series prices. Tom Byrne does a great job covering this sport on Mad Dog Sports Radio, Sirius XM. He joins us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Tom, thanks for the time today. How are you?
I'm very well, gentlemen. Fired up. I tell you, they got lucky again, the NBA, with this play-in tournament. LeBron, Steph, Joel Embiid. It's crazy.
It really is. Must-watch television tomorrow night and on Wednesday. Let's begin with the Lakers game as they are currently, well, pretty much a one-point dog at New Orleans. JVT and I were speculating earlier. We think that the Lakers are going to go off as the favorite here. Do you agree with that? Who do you like in the game?
Yeah, I definitely think the golf is the favorite, but I don't know that it'll be much more than a point. I think it could be pretty firm. I took the point and a half, to be honest with you. I know everybody's annoyed about this in New Orleans, all the Lakers. This is not the matchup we want. They just pummeled us. But I think what you guys want to get into is fascinating, and that is the idea that the Lakers might not be as motivated as you'd assume in this sort of spot because the winner gets Denver. And that's a harsh reality for the Lakers who are not beating the Nuggets. That's a five-game series. All due respect to LeBron and AD, that's not lasting that long. And I think the Lakers know that. And this isn't to kill Oklahoma City because they're a young team that doesn't make a lot of young team sort of mistakes. It's weird. You can kind of trust them, but they're a thin front line. And most importantly, they're incredibly inexperienced. If you're the Lakers, you feel much better about the Thunder. And so that's a little wrinkle that you got to remember in this game.
So, Tom, how do you think that manifests, right? Like, I don't think that we're going to get an injury report tomorrow and the LeBron James and Anthony Davis aren't playing. Maybe it's a possibility. No. But is this more of like a, all right, we're down by like 10 in the last couple of minutes. Instead of pushing for this, we're going to call the dogs off. If that is a thought, how does that manifest in a game like this?
Exactly. How do you quantify it exactly? Yeah. I don't know. You know, we probably spend too much time as handicappers trying to dissect this sort of thing, if we're fair about it. But I think that's what it is. If they're down, it's getting later in the game. I don't know if they would go as hard in that spot as they would otherwise. Like, they might think about starting to get some guys some rest here, thinking, all right, not the end of the world. We'll rest up. We'll play Sacramento or Golden State. Now, that is, you know, that's dicey whether you play Sacramento or Golden State. They're going to be dangerous in their own way. Now it's one and done. They haven't played well against Sacramento all year, and Golden State has Steph. And so, yeah, that's the question. How do you quantify that? That's what I've been asking myself with this entire handicap. How do I quantify the old heads? Because I'm seeing value with all these teams playing the old heads. I like the Pelicans plus 1.5. This is going to be a little surprising to many, but I like Sacramento plus 2.5. I'm thinking about taking Minnesota against Phoenix and Kevin Durant minus 1.5. I wonder if I could get a 1 somewhere in some shop. You know, maybe I'm underrating the idea that these old heads, Durant, Steph, and LeBron, could take it to that next level that they haven't been willing to show in the regular season. But I'm not 100% sure I'm buying that. And the numbers certainly don't support it.
Okay. How about in the Eastern Conference then, the play-in number with the Sixers, the 7 as we speak, the Heat, the 8, the winner here will move on. The Knicks looming. Now, the Sixers are 4.5-point favorite in this game against the Heat and the play-in side. What do you make of that number?
Yeah, I made it the same number. That's a great number. I don't know if that you could play that. I think the Philadelphia 76ers are the ultimate wild card because when Joel Embiid's 100%, I've never seen a Sixer in my lifetime, and I go to a lot of games who's had more impact on both ends of the floor. The reality is he's usually about 80% of himself in the postseason, and just that difference alone is the difference between losing to Toronto at 7 or beating them, plus he missed time. Losing to Boston or beating them as he was banged up again, you know, always dragging the leg, broken faces. And so this year, the question is, was he out yesterday because the 76ers were confident enough they'd win the game anyway. And they, you know, were going to do that. So it probably makes sense. Or that little tweak that we saw the other night that he came back and played, is that a bigger deal than we know? And so it's hard to really say what we're going to get, but I think Miami is dangerous. I don't think they're going to find a pixie dust on the shoulders again this year. I think Philadelphia survives in advance and plays in New York, but 4.5 is a good number.
So what about this one? Talk me off the ledge here. I bet on the Hawks to win the division before the season started. They stink. They can't do anything, but Trae Young's back, and we've seen them flex their muscles in the play, and they smoked the Heat last year. What do you make of their matchup here with Chicago?
This game is awful, is it not? The only people who are going to be watching this are the handicappers. This is like the Cleveland-Orlando series. Just give that to NBA TV and go away. listen, you know, neither of these teams are any good, so it's hard to trust either. The number to me is right on point. I see what you're saying. Maybe Atlanta, they've been through these sort of battles before. The DeJounte Murray-Trey Young pairing, though, JVT, has been a massive disappointment. They just don't gel well at all. You know, DeJounte Murray is a good two-way player, but he hasn't impacted winning the way I thought he would in Atlanta. Trey Young is a just terrific defender. It's the same sort of trouble that Milwaukee's having with Dame Lillard out there in the perimeter. He just can't defend, and it kills you. And so this is a stay-away game for me. You want to play an in-game, try to get a feel. That might make a little bit more sense.
Let's follow the money here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Our guest Tom Byrne does a great job with the NBA on Mad Dog Sports Radio, SiriusXM. You can follow him on X. He's at number one. Tom Byrne, how about some series prices then? And JVT and I were also kicking this around, Tom. We don't think that many people are going to make the case for the Clippers. Like when you see ESPN's poll come out probably later on today, like let's say there's 16, 17 of their experts picking. I think maybe two will pick the Clippers because of the Mavericks' recent play, but it's basically a pick 'em. Right. Do you give the Clippers a pretty good chance to win this series though?
Yeah, I have them winning the series.
Okay, wow, there you go.
I think we could trust Kawhi Leonard. I mean, we saw last year before the injury, he was taking it to Kevin Durant. I mean, it was embarrassing, the man. And so I think you're going to get that version of Kawhi back. And listen, James Harden is not somebody you want to trust. I get it. But if we're going to be fair about this, I mean, how about the game one performance with no Embiid on the road in Boston to step back to win the game? Game five, I was in the building. Game goes to overtime. He's the best player on the floor. So, I mean, there are times when he plays well enough. Paul George is another guy who's got that reputation as a choke artist. And okay, but if you go back to his Indiana games, everybody thought he was going to be the next great postseason player. So these sort of things could change on a whim. Russell Westbrook coming off the bench is a much better spot. He's not forcing things. We all love Ty Lue. Well, let's see him figure this thing out. I know Dallas is red hot, and they are scary because they're defending. That was always their discernible weakness, and now they are defending. But home court advantage was worth 2.2 points a game in a regular season. It's always worth over somewhere between 4 and 5 per 100 possessions a game. I got to knock that down a little bit because the better team usually has home court. But home court is still a big deal in the NBA.
So that leads me to my next question for you. Overall, so we saw last year, Tom, like home court advantage in the regular season was fine, but then they really ratcheted up in the postseason. And I think I was looking at it, I had about like 5, maybe 4.5 points. What do you think that the ratcheting up home court, what do you think it's worth here in the postseason?
I have it at 3.7 right now.
Okay.
I lowered it. I had it at 4.3 based on points per possession last year. It was 4.6 2 years ago, 4.3 this past year. But I'd knock it down a little over a half point just based on the reality that more times than not, the better team's going to be home. If it's a best of 3 to 5, the better team's home, right? If it's a 4 to 7, the better team's home. So I knocked it down a peg, but 3.7 is still a massive adjustment. And so I do think that's necessary. You can't handicap it the same way you would in the regular season. And I do think that applies to the play-in game. Do you agree with that, JVT? Not just the playoffs?
Oh, I think absolutely. I mean, there are many game sevens, right? It's win or go home, essentially.
Yeah. I absolutely agree. I've heard people say otherwise. I don't know why. Anyway.
All right. Well, you mentioned that you are looking at the Timberwolves here at a very small number at home against the Suns. They played yesterday. Suns blew them out. What do you make of the series price then, too? You want to add a little Minnesota to the portfolio as the Suns are about $1.15 favorite here?
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. You could put a little something on Minnesota. Now, look, here's the thing that worries you, Mitch, about Minnesota. They have long stretches where they don't score.
Yep.
And that's the problem. They got a middle-of-the-pack offense. But defensively, all right, you want to make a big deal about Orlando. That's great, but you can't give Isaac 35 minutes. I think this is the best defensive team in the game. They're so big up front. And Anthony Edwards, man, he's the ultimate wild card. Now, there are games where he can lose them games. He's just so darn inefficient. But other times, he looks like the next Michael Jordan. It's ridiculous. Fun guy to watch. Everybody wants to kill Gobert. Everybody's into analytics, and everybody watches, thinks that Victor Wembanyama should be Defensive Player of the Year, and I think they have a great argument. But Gobert, nonetheless, is a great defender. He's a definite big-time impact maker with his ability to protect the rim and help side and everything else. So Phoenix is a team that hasn't stood up all year. Now, they did show a little gumption the other night. They're down 35-4 first quarter to Clippers. They did bounce back. They got their revenge, if you will, a couple days later. What a good game a couple days ago. But I haven't trusted this Phoenix team all year. Beal shot. I think that makes a lot of sense.
All right, Milwaukee, we're under 250 now, minus 245 against Indiana. We don't know about Giannis yet, but what do you make of this series?
I was shocked at the opening price. JVT, I actually saw you put out the series price. I was shocked, and I wasn't surprised you came out maybe an hour later with the adjusted price, because I think a lot of us were looking, oh, wow, okay, so we got to make sure we get in on this. I mean, why are the Pacers, I know you don't want to make too big a deal about the in-season tournament, but they beat them on the way there. Okay, they've got maybe the best offense of the sport when it's cooking. Now, the other thing is Milwaukee is 17-19 since Doc Rivers took over. Yeah. Have a good laugh about that, by the way. 17. Yeah. I mean, are you kidding me? They fired a guy who was 30-13, and Doc Rivers comes in, and he's beating his own chest, and he's 17-19. That's a little tough to take, but they're not playing well at all. They can't defend down on the perimeter. I thought they'd be marginally better in the offseason because they feel the loss of Jrue Holiday and their starting two guard. I don't even know that they are better. I think ultimately they get by maybe a seven-game series, but there still was a ton of value in Indiana and the series. I forget what it was. What was the one-and-a-half games? I forget what the price was now is what I looked at right away.
Let's see. One-and-a-half. I got Milwaukee minus, even money. Milwaukee minus one-and-a-half, even money. And if you want to lay one-and-a-half with the Indiana Pacers, you get 3-1.
Yeah, the plus one-and-a-half with the Pacers was good, too. All right, yep, that's another one with value. Yep.
All right, pal. Good talking to you. You can follow Tom on X. He's at one Tom Byrne, B-Y-R-N-E. Catch him on Mad Dog Sports Radio on Sirius XM as well. Thanks, Tom. We appreciate it.
Anytime, folks.
Be good. There you go. He joined us here on the Progressive Guest Line. That's the one that sticks out to me big time. Everything he just said about the Bucks and the Pacers. We'll recap the betting action from the weekend, the huge prices, the names to miss the cut, the upsets in the NBA, EPL, UFC next here on Follow the Money.